Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Javier, we now know who the final entrant in the Women's Elimination Chamber match is. It is Alexa Bliss. We also had our presumably final segment with the therapist, and he has presented her with a Lily replica, but because she's stuffed with the original stuffing from the original Lily, he thinks that will be her guardian angel of sorts as she moves forward in her career. Javier, what'd you think of the final therapist session, and are you surprised that Alexa's the final entrant, and do you think she has a chance to win?
I figured a final entrant would have been either her, Sasha, or maybe Bayley if she were ready, or maybe Asuka. One of those girls would have been the person. The whole Lily thing, definitely weird. It kind of seems like he's telling her, yeah, he made such a big deal of, like, you know, it, inside of her is the real Lily. Her spirit's still in there, as in, like, are you trying to, like, let her know that she's still in there? It's just a weird ending. This whole entire thing has been weird. Yeah.
Well, where do you think – how did you expect this to go? Where were you hoping it would go? And how do you feel about where, at least at this moment, we've landed? What do you read into her demeanor and seeming like she feels empowered to be normal based on the therapy sessions? But, of course – there's, you know, with such an emotional roller coaster ride during the segments on this show, you know, I wouldn't say stability is the first word that comes to mind when I think of her character at this point.
Yeah, I think the idea is to make her pseudo normal with, like, hints at her breaking down or, like, still doing some extreme stuff, and maybe leading eventually into a little bit further. I think it was mainly to remove the actual mystical aspects of it, but still keeping the, you know, that there's this personality that talks to her. So the doll's not going to move anymore, but she's going to pretend like she could hear it talk.
So we might – your forecasting will be spared supernatural.
Yeah. I mean, you know, maybe like a hint of it here and there, but not like what we had been seeing with her winking at the camera and that sort of stuff. I'm hoping that that's gone, because that's not something you could have done that when you didn't have a crowd, with, you know, tricks and stuff. But now that you have crowds and stuff, like, the, you know, every single time they try to do something in front of a live crowd, it, you know, it's obvious it's fake.
Yeah, and the crowd is more apt to boo.
Yeah.
Yeah, and reject it. How would you have done the therapy sessions differently, if anything comes to mind, in terms of, and it's hard to tell, it's hard to get too into it because we don't know for sure where she's heading, her character, but is there anything you would have done differently when reintroducing her?
Speed the whole thing up, because it feels like nothing really happened,
yeah,
in all the weeks that they just, it was just stretching out and not really doing anything. The only two memorable parts were when she says that she beat up a old lady, and then she described her just like Lily, which was, a cute take, an interesting take. And then here at the end, which was kind of weird, again, the it almost felt, all of a sudden the psychologist kind of felt a little bit sinister. And I'm like, you know what, that could have actually made for a good story where now he, you know, gives her, you know, the dead Lily and starts, like, speaking through Lily, you know, and then, like, manipulating her, like, become her manager, manipulating her behind the scenes. So, you know, that would have been an interesting story, but obviously, like, in another universe, not in the WWE. But, yeah, I mean, that's we'll see where it goes from here. I'm kind of neutral on it right now.
Yeah, I'm been wondering if they had a really clear idea of what message they wanted to send through those segments or not. You know, with WWE, sometimes, you know, they put what they think are cute and fun and entertaining ideas strung together over the course of weeks, but it doesn't guarantee that there's a coherent master plan that's going to come to fruition. And I'm not convinced that studying what we've seen so far, in retrospect, will have a bunch of clues and breadcrumbs that will lead to wherever they're going. And I don't want to feel that way. I get bummed out when I feel that way about WWE. But I think there's a pretty good chance that this will have been largely just, you know, each segment was done just to kind of, quote, entertain people that week and kind of zig and zag. But it's not really part of a coherent end game with her character where those segments will have been all that necessary to get us there. But I'm hoping I'm wrong. What do you think about that?
No, I'm pretty sure it was just the length of it was content, because I think the only like purpose of the scene was to probably remove the supernatural element, you know, from it. Again,
yeah.
Fingers crossed. And the thing is that instead of doing the story in 1 week or 2 weeks, it took them, you know, however long it took them to get here.
The other big aspect of this match, or another big aspect of this show, I should say, in building up the Elimination Chamber was the Gauntlet match. And Bianca Belair winning final entry, defeating an exhausted Rhea Ripley, who put on hell of a performance for around 44 minutes, defeating three other opponents along the way before Belair took advantage of her exhausted bad luck of the draw, or Bianca took advantage of her good luck of the draw, being the last one in the Gauntlet match. Multiple things we're talking about here. One, I was curious what they're going to do with Rhea Ripley and Doudrop. If Doudrop won, it would still protect Ripley, because Ripley had already been through a quote grueling battle with Nikki, and that could then lead to a more natural babyface match or babyface heel matchup with Belair and Doudrop if they wanted to go that way, but they didn't. What were you thinking as you were watching it in terms of the choices they made with the booking and what you drew from it? I guess the main thing I drew from it is maybe they're gearing up Rhea Ripley for a renewed top-tier push, and this was kind of a statement showcase opportunity for her, and Doudrop is more relegated to a gatekeeper role, getting a push, but as a gatekeeper, not someone, you know, they're planning to push at the very top after WrestleMania. I put an asterisk next to all of this because, you know, the Viking Raiders lost 1 week and then were number one contenders the next week. I always point to that, but like sometimes, unfortunately, what happens in a match, you know, an outcome of a match might not matter a week later, much less 2 months later. But so with that caveat, what do you think, Javier?
Well, I thought it was pretty obvious. It was intended to heat up Ripley by going through everyone she did. I would think that maybe after this leads into something between Ripley and Doudrop is the most likely thing I can think of. Sort of how they had Doudrop keeping Bianca Belair warm while Becky feuded with Liv Morgan. So I kind of think that might be what they're planning on doing, and then, you know, and then Rhea be you know, the next person up after whatever happens at WrestleMania.
Yeah. Yep. Anything else jump out in that match in terms of match quality or who looked good or who didn't look good over the course of a segment that, counting the initial ring introduction, took more than 3/4 of an hour?
Yeah, this is definitely a wrestling-heavy show today. I wouldn't be surprised if there was more wrestling on this show than all the previous weeks of the year so far put together. but, yeah, I mean, I like the match. I thought it was, you know, really well done. I mean, they did make it's actually one of the good things about when you have someone in there for such a long period of time, because, you know, some people don't like long matches, but I do like long matches because of, you know, you start feeling the exhaustion of the wrestlers taking. And I you know, was able to really identify with what Ripley was going, you know, through there, because I was, you know, watching it for 40 minutes, you know, tired for her. So, you know, I thought it was really well done. I also thought Liv Morgan approached the match with a little bit more like when she went from the move, she you know, particularly that one knee that she hit, it felt like she was really, you know, going for it. She you know, like trying to prove something or something. And I thought she looked pretty good.
And then that kick to the throat. Yikes.
Yeah.
That was that she absorbed. That was quite a moment in the match. Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of people didn't see this show because it's on Sci-Fi and it's Valentine's Day and people's schedules are different because of that. But it was, I thought overall a worthwhile show for people to invest if they're WWE fans and they chose to watch this episode of Raw, what was your overall thought on the episode?
It was good for the wrestling. I mean, I think for the most part, it didn't really like do anything that like blew anything out of the water. But for the it was just a lot of solid wrestling. I mean, you had your screwy finishes here and there. And if you're paying attention, you knew they were coming. So.
Oh yeah, that's the thing. Yep, totally. All right, let's pause. We got a lot more to talk about in this episode, but let's pause and introduce ourselves. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, February 14th, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, publisher, founder of the long-running Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and the website pwtorch.com. And also host of this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. Those are free, available on just about any podcast app. Just search Wade Keller and subscribe to both logos, the one with the red lettering and the one with the blue lettering, and you'll get all our shows, including new content throughout the week on both feeds, along with some best of shows from 5 and 10 years ago. This week is a big week because we got Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net on the flagship tomorrow. So start sending in your questions and comments on a whole broad array of topics. GCW or Impact Wrestling or ROH, in addition to Raw and SmackDown and AEW and NXT, with a special episode of NXT tomorrow night. Jason and I will be talking a bit about that too, although we'll probably not get the show up. We might not get the show up even before the NXT special starts, so we probably won't spend too much time previewing it, even though we'll record it beforehand. But anyway, send your questions and comments to WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. Then later in the week, Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure, a VIP weekend show, has a special pay-per-view preview episode that'll drop later this week on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast feed. They will be previewing the Elimination Chamber. So be on the lookout for that special guest-hosted episode of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. The other voice you hear on today's show is Javier Machado. He is a PW Torch contributor and often calls, and we bring him on for roundtable discussions. Javier, welcome.
Hey, Wade. Thank you for having me.
Now, I'm saving a jingle that has been created for you for the next time you call in.
Cool.
Yes. We decided it was important for Javier to have his own music instead of, you know, just segments of other music that's left over on our switchboard that we do a second or two of. So, someone who can volunteer to name themselves or not sent in a jingle. We only got one. If people want to compete or send in multiple ones, Javier jingles are welcome. You can send them to the show here to officially christen his entry into the shows. Javier, how are things going for you?
They're going fine. Another day. Very astute of you figuring out that I'd be the one without any Valentine's Day plans. So
that was not. The primary factor, Javier.
I'm not, you know, putting you down on that. I'm just, you know, very astute observation is all I'm saying.
All right. So let's see. We got a lot more to talk about on the show, but we welcome your phone calls. We're light on calls today. Not a surprise, given it's on Sci-Fi and it's Valentine's Day. So this is the chance, if you are live streaming, to make your debut on the program. And if you're a regular and you're just not sure if you want to call tonight, give us a call. Our number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. You can also email us, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com, with your comments as we record the show. That's WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. You can always find the link, by the way, to the live stream. If you download our show and listen the next day, you're welcome to listen to our live stream. And we put the link up on our Twitter feed near the end of Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown at PW Torch. Just follow us at PW Torch on Twitter. You can also find the link at the top and bottom of my TV reports at our main website, pwtorch.com, covering Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. We also have a live NXT show hosted most often by Kelly Wells, along with Tom Staupe and Nate Lindberg, and sometimes some special guest co-hosts. And you can find a link to their live stream in Kelly's NXT report at pwtorch.com on Tuesday nights. And this week it's a bigger episode than usual. And so it might be a good week to make your debut as a caller on that show. They start a few minutes after NXT goes off the air on Tuesday nights. That show is available for download for VIP members, usually on Tuesday nights, and for everyone else on Wednesday nights with ads. So a couple ways you can listen, but VIP membership or through Patreon is a way to get it sooner and with the ads removed. Full information on VIP membership, as always, available at pwtorch.com/govip. pwtorch.com/govip. If you are in the Patreon ecosystem and you want to support us there and get some benefits, we have three different tiers, starting at $4.99 and up to $9.99, along with an annual discount. Patreon.com/PWTorchVIP. Patreon.com/PWTorchVIP. All right, let's move on to some other topics here, and we'll go to our phone lines and begin with William in San Diego. William, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. What stood out on Raw tonight for you?
Hey, guys. I wasn't as into it as I think you were. Wait. I do think that the gauntlet match helped
Everett
a little.
Awesome.
And I also think that the main event was pretty good. But I just think that the opening, maybe the opening segment kind of put me in a bit of a bad mood because I just hate whenever they do that copy-paste template formula of there's one guy staying in the ring, then another guy comes out, they do their promo. There's a guy waiting backstage, waiting for patiently for the guy in the ring to finish their promo. They come out and rinse and repeat. And I also thought that in that segment, Bobby just wasn't that good in the mic. It was like they've been doing such a pretty decent job protecting him and making him look good, and I think he had a pretty bad night on the mic. I don't know what you guys think of the segment. I think the only one that came out looking any good was Brock.
It is very much a paint-by-numbers approach to promoting a big multi-person match. You can, you know, William, as you are, kind of just sighing and going, come on, you know, we've seen this so much. Or you can just be like, all right, this is the format they use. Let everybody get their characters across to build up the match. WWE doesn't have a lot of incentive, for reasons we discuss, to reinvent themselves or stay you know, real creative and try new things. They kind of have their things that they do, and they plug different people into them to say different things to each other. And that's what they did here. Javier, in that within that format, first you can talk about that format, that kind of paint-by-numbers, rinse and repeat thing. Well, how you feel about that in general? And then how does this rank, and did anyone stand out as especially good or bad? William pointing out he thought Lashley had an off night and Brock was the star.
Yeah, my first line of my notes is Bobby Lashley, and I'm assuming the Parade of Idiots is coming up soon. And sure
yeah.
enough, then Seth Rollins came out and Riddle, Theory, AJ Styles. So it's tired. It's tiresome. One of the reasons, though, because once I saw that, looked at the names, I'm like, you know, one of the reasons that I think the show felt a little bit better for me slightly is the fact that while Riddle was involved in this, he was also involved with the stuff with Alpha Academy, which, of course, is involved with Randy Orton, but he was involved with something with Seth Rollins. So it felt more alive, and the people felt less, you know, cordoned off to their own little feuds. AJ Styles was in that opening while also having a match with Damian Priest. So I think for very few times it felt more alive instead of like very, you know, cut into pieces. So, but yeah, I mean, it's boring. The opening was boring. It was, you know, the same things you would expect. And yeah, Lashley had a rough, I noted it down that it was a rough night for Lashley, just like me right there. You know, seemed to stumble over his words and not get out what he was trying to get out. And I mean, he occasionally happens, but it was pretty bad on him today. So I don't know, like, what the reaction backstage is going to be to him.
How about Austin Theory and what this segment told you, Javier, about his role on Saturday in Saudi Arabia? Is he just there to be a kind of a borderline comedy figure, being over his head, not realize it, be overeager and take some bumps before being eliminated? Is that the, or is there another, is this a hint or an indication of maybe something else?
Well, I mean, there's usually a rule I go by that whoever looked weakest the show prior to a pay-per-view is going to be most likely the one to win. And by that rule, Austin Theory would probably be the one most likely to win the championship. I doubt it, but you know, but I mean, highly doubt it. But yeah, I think he's around just to be, you know, thrown around by the big guys. I think he's gonna. I wouldn't be surprised if they want to try to do what happened in AEW and when Keith Lee tossed what's his name into orbit. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's gonna be there to be basically stuck between Brock Lesnar and Bobby Lashley, and then you know, just you know, pray that. I think that's pretty much all he's there for.
Yeah, I mean, I have the same suspicion. You know, the reverse psychology, or you know, beat someone down before you build them up. Back in the 1980s, at house shows, WWE would have whoever the next tag team champions were going to be lose everywhere, so that when they won the belts, especially if they're heels, all the fans would think, oh, wow, they're vulnerable. I saw them lose last time, so I'm going to pay money to see the babyface team and their title reign in my city. I mean, that kind of psychology has been there for a while. It has its you know, its advocates and its detractors in terms of the message that sends and whether it's effective. But you could say, you know, AJ had a bad night too, losing, and maybe that means he's going to win. But I think with this match, and Nick Barbetti and Tom Colley will be talking about it later this week here on the show, I mean, I think the most obvious option is the most obvious options are the ones probably to focus on, which is Lashley retaining or Lesnar winning. I think those would be the top two things. But I mean, I'm not ruling out a Styles win or a Riddle win. I'm thinking Austin Theory has very little chance, but WWE reverse psychology is there. And, you know, Seth is, I mean, I assume it's Seth and KO in some sort of program, but I guess give me your ranking of most likely to least likely, with, you know, noting if you think it's a single digit or less than 1% chance of the people late in your list.
Well, I mean, I can make an argument for pretty much everyone except Seth, because number one and two, you know, like one A and one B, is Lesnar and Bobby Lashley. Lesnar, if they want to do a champion versus champion, and they brought that up a few, you know, enough times, made me think that give a slight edge on that with Bobby Lashley, just because usually in multi-man, you know, these multi-man matches with a really clear winner, the one who comes in with the champion walks out with it. After that, I have AJ Styles. Just they've really been building him, and this was a protected loss with Damian Priest. I doubt it, because I think I mean, what made me think a little bit more is that he shook Priest's hand, because I thought what was going to end up happening was that Priest was going to lose it, turn heel, and the two were going to feud over the U.S. title. I thought that was going to be heading into WrestleMania, but because it shook hands this time, you know, that could still happen, but maybe they're shaking hands because they're like, hey, let's give the title to AJ Styles to, you know, shake things up a bit. Then the Theory is a possibility, just because it's, you know, it would be just so out there, like, you know, a WTF moment. And Riddle would make sense, because then, you know, puts him at odds with Randy Orton. You know, where Randy Orton covets the belt. So I can make an argument for all of them in pretty much that order.
Yeah.
And then Seth Rollins. The thing with Seth Rollins is, like, the only thing the only argument I can make for him is that he's the least likely of all of them to win. So, you know.
So there you go.
So, yeah. So, if Becky finishes the night with her title, then they can do a, you know, husband and wife, both champions dominating thing, and then have them both work together.
All right, very good. We'll go back to William. Any follow-up on that or anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, since we're kind of on Seth, I think I've been noticing lately that they've been protecting him a little more, probably ever since, like, around day one-ish. I feel like for maybe a year or so, they like didn't care that much about protecting him, or, you know, if he lost every now and then, it wasn't like a big deal. But I feel like recently they've just been giving him more wins, and you know, even against Roman Reigns, who that's like the tough guy in the company, like they really make sure to protect him in that loss. And one other thing I wanted to mention is to me that for a bit there, it seemed like they were maybe moving in a different direction with this character. But I think at this point, I think they're just going to stick with this. And I'm not really a big fan of the whole laughing and the suit and the dancing and the theatrical over-the-top things of his promos. So I was kind of hoping they would go away from that, but it seems that they're just sticking with that. But with that all in mind, with how much they seem to be protecting him, what do you guys think are his plan for Mania? Do you think they have something important planned for him, or is it up in the air?
Yeah, Javier, every time I watch Seth, I'm just not fully satisfied with this character. You know, it had been a struggle for Seth for a while. I remember doing a podcast with Steve Austin however many years ago now. And he was like, what is Seth freaking Rollins? What is it? What is he? I don't know what he is. I don't know what his character is. And Seth has been in search of that. You know, he was in the Shield, and then he sort of wrestled like a baby face, but talked like a heel with that, you know, just annoying cackle voice and nasally tone and all that. It's made to be an obnoxious heel. So he's kind of leaning into, I guess, a Joker type character mixed with, I don't know, Johnny Fairplay. And with loud suits and I don't know, laughing at his own jokes. And so I still doesn't feel big time and you know, A-level top tier character for me. And it's not really defined as anything. We don't really know what led him to being this person. You know, Cameron Grimes, they tell a story, you know, about why he is the way he is. And with Seth, it just sort of, you know, morphed into this. So I'm still not sold on it. I know some people like it, and, you know, the lack of backstory isn't as important to them, or maybe they see enough of a backstory. He seems like a, you know, gatekeeper, top borderline top-tier utility guy, but I don't see him, this character, headlining in a compelling way for world title matches. How do you feel about Seth's character overall?
When he was doing the Reigns thing, I started because I've not been a Reigns fan pretty much ever. And when he started when he started interacting with Roman Reigns, it started coalescing a little bit for me. And I'm like, oh, you know what? I'm kind of getting behind this character. But I think it's because during that, he kind of toned down what he was doing to a 9, or back to a 10. Let's just say, let's be back to a 10. But then, like, today, he came out, I'm like, oh, you know, last time I saw him, I was enjoying him. And then he was, like, so over the top with the laughing, like, trying to outdo Sasha Banks, you know. And I'm like, just shut up. I don't want to hear you anymore. Because I think during the Reigns storyline, they were kind of trying to keep him a little bit more babyface, but not turn him because they wanted him back as a heel when he came back to Raw. But when they tuned him down, you know, I thought it was a good character. And then all of a sudden it's like, you know, again, a cartoon, you know, because he, you know, instead of being like a person with, you know, who's a little bit like emotionally extreme, he's now just a caricature of a human being.
William, back to you.
Yeah. I wanted to move on to the, Becky, and Lita contract signing. I think from a character's perspective, I thought Becky coming out and looking like the saddest person in the world, that she's going to have to, in her mind, she's going to have to put down Lita, who Lita is like her icon, her biggest hero, I guess. And I think from that perspective, from a character perspective, it's a pretty good idea, pretty fun idea. The whole segment to me, I don't think that it really got me pumped to see the match. It didn't like get me any more excited or sold on it. It also kind of felt, I don't know, like a little anticlimactic the way she just drew the contract at her. I guess we've been kind of conditioned to expect that all these contract signings are going to end with a table, someone being put through a table. So in that sense, I can kind of respect that every now and then one of them doesn't end in that formulaic way, but I guess I was expecting a little more for the home show.
Yeah, I mean, Becky kind of went to the place where Baron Corbin was before he became Happy Corbin. And, you know, I get the psychology behind it. I thought Becky was creative. I liked her looking like she, whether you believe her or not, is emotionally distraught over what she is going to have to do to Lita in order to retain her title and protect her legacy, but take out her somebody that she looked up to who helped define her and make her possible. I liked it, and I thought Lita's response was good. I thought there were some key lines. I'm not just back because I have one more match in me. I've got a run, a championship run in me, and not backing down. I think this has been some of Lita's best mic work, and I think Becky continues to seem like she is genuinely trying to bring creativity to what she does, even if not everything is a home run. But I think she's getting a lot of hits. And also working in a way that is elevating as best as can be done her opponents, which I think is part of why she, you know, I think she's embraced being a heel. And she's staying creatively fulfilled as a heel by working genuinely hard, I think, to get booed and put over her babyface opponents. And I thought this was another example of it. And I think you have to keep in mind, you know, they're trying to figure out how to fill TV time in ways that doesn't feel entirely redundant or predictable. And, you know, the opening segment felt, you know, somewhat redundant and predictable leading up to the Brock Lesnar appearance tossing Austin Theory around. And for some people, that'll be satisfying. Other people, too cliched and paint by numbers. Becky and Lita with the contract signing was different, Javier. What did you think?
I actually like this a lot. Her demeanor, you brought up whether you believe her or not, and it's like it works either way. In one way, if she's lying, she's a duplicitous heel.
We'll edit that out, Javier. Don't worry.
But if she is, you know, being sincere, it's coming from an incredible place of narcissism. You want to believe it that it's real, and considering the fact that she didn't like smirk as she was walking away and she walked away still dejectedly, I'm like, well, you know, I prefer that story because it's like, you know, I can't believe, you know, because it's already fait accompli that she's already gonna, you know, put her down like a dog, so in her mind,
yeah.
So you know, I dug it. And then my actual favorite line was the that Lita said was, if I had a hand in creating this, then I'm gonna have to end it. So
yeah,
that was the line from Lita that I actually liked. But yeah, I dug the segment. I'm not a person who like really gets into, I want to see these two guys fight, or, you know, these two guys fight kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm more just led along for the story, but, you know, so I can't really say that, you know, man, I really want to see them fight now, as opposed to, you know, I just want to see their interaction, their relationship, you know, together. And, you know, maybe this goes beyond, you know, this show and like, you know, another show after this, like, you know, continue on to Raw or something. But, you know, before they go to, you know, Becky's opponent. But yeah, I mean, I dug it for what it is. I mean, it's a special, you know, one of the special matches that normally save for WrestleMania. But you know, it's interesting enough for me.
Yeah. Yep. All right, William. Yeah, I think we liked the segments you're bringing up more than you did, which is fine. That's why we like having callers. Any response to any of that, or do you want to bring up another topic?
Yeah. No, it's not like I dislike the segment per se. I think I'm in agreement that I liked it from a character's perspective. I think I was just hoping that, you know, if the story is that Lucky is like sad or depressed, or whether she's faking it or not, if she's sad that she is going to like do some awful stuff to Lita, I think I would just like to have seen like a sample of that, like, here's a sample of what I'm going to do at Elimination Chamber to keep the title.
Javier, anything you want to add to that?
Well, I mean, she did bring up that I'm going to go after your neck. So, you know, so I think that was more a verbal thing. And if she really is legitimately like, I don't want to hurt you, you know, if she really legitimate, you know, she'd save it for the match because she just doesn't want to interact with her, you know, with her childhood hero. So, yes, I mean that's how that was my interpretation of that.
By the way, ProWrestling.net's poll is up very early in the voting, but it's 80% thumbs up, 10% thumbs down, 10% thumbs in the middle. So for those who watched, it seems like, you know, early results, small sample size, pretty decent reception to this match that was heavy on wrestling. William, back to you. Anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, I think there's like a few docs going crazy there in the background, so apologies for that. But I think they're just crazy about Raw. They want to get it on this. Yeah, I wanted to talk about, I guess, a few quick things before I leave you guys. I actually got a, you know, I reluctantly must confess that I got the Dana Brooke being all sad and dejected and confused that she got betrayed by Reggie. And then after that, with perfect comedic timing, the waiter comes in with the bill. That got a laugh at me. And then the other thing I want to talk about was Kevin Owens. I thought for a second that we're going to head into a thing with him where he was just going to, for a few weeks, pretend like he was like the biggest Texas fan and just do all these typical Texas things like wearing cowboy hats or whatever. And maybe there would have been some comedic potential there, but they seem to be heading in a different direction. I don't know I don't know if there's like anything to discuss there, but that's just a few quick observations I had.
Yeah, William, I'm glad you brought that up. Kevin Owens, here. Did you think last week, oh, he's setting up, taking a stunner from Steve Austin in Dallas? Did you get that sense, or do you agree after the fact that that might be where they're going? And then did this week change your thoughts at all on that?
No, that's what I thought. That's what I thought after watching the previous week. That was, you know, this is set up for Stone Cold. Stone Cold's gonna have some sort of presence on there, and Kevin Owens uses the stunner himself. So I'm like, it just makes sense.
So KO is gonna come out and complain about not having a match. He's gonna start ripping on Texas, and then glass breaks. The crowd gets gets to pop for him in a crowd pleasing moment where Austin gives a stunner to KO. I mean, it writes itself.
Yep. It's that simple.
Yep. Now, are you surprised with the approach they took with KO's promo tonight? Is this what you would have expected this far out of WrestleMania for him to just go from pretending to love Texas to just turning so hard against them so suddenly?
I mean, it's KO. I wonder. I'm gonna wait, go along with him for the ride, see what he does. Because if he basically figures out, because I mean, he could just make a big spectacle of this and like, you know, start using props and stuff to insult Texas on the way there. So and I mean, and he already laid the groundwork by complaining about Texas and then turning that into a shot to where were they? Indianapolis.
Yep.
Yeah, so, you know, and then he turned in a shot, you know, they stuck this way just like Indianapolis does. So, he, you know, that's something you could just, you know, he says something about Texas and then says, oh, just like in the town that we're in.
William, anything else you want to bring up?
No, I'll let you guys get to other callers and emails. Always a pleasure talking to you. Have a good rest of your week.
Great, appreciate it. Thanks, William. Always good to hear from you. Our number, if you want to get on board, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. There is no one else on hold. So this is your chance to jump in line. But we do have some emails. So we'll shift to that, and I got some other topics I want to bring up, but they're not covered in our emails. And we'll start with Justin, who said, the Alexa Bliss therapy sessions are finally done. Bliss has to be winning the chamber on Saturday, right? There's no way they've been building on her return since January 3rd just to lose her first match back, especially when you could have just thrown Queen Zelina or Carmella into the match. What are your guys' thoughts? So, Javier, expand on this a little bit, because what are the options? What are the top odds? It's, you know, Bianca Belair gave a soundbite promo during her ring entrance. They aired it, an inside interview, for the Gauntlet match, and she just said this is her chance on Saturday to, get her momentum back, and the spotlight will end up where it should be, back on her for WrestleMania. Is Belair Becky the right match to go to, or does it feel like it's too soon and it's not fresh? and it'd be better to do, for instance, Bliss, or is there even a third option now that we know Bliss is filling that match, or that the empty slot in the chamber match?
Well, the problem is that because of how they deal with their talent, if Bianca doesn't win and challenge Becky, then what's Bianca, you know, going to do? Because she was already, you know, wrestling. I already mentioned earlier, she was, you know, had that little mini feud with Doudrop. That was kind of, you know, it wasn't like let's forget about this. It was to, you know, keep. It was a second storyline going on to keep her heat, you know, keep her heated up. So, you know, they generally don't do that. So, is she then going to? They're going to keep her warm with something else, with another. I think it's got to be Bianca Belair that wins this. It's to face Becky. You know, and if she doesn't, I think Becky ends up retaining at WrestleMania. But it would make sense that Bianca wins and gets revenge for, you know, her final revenge for what happened on SummerSlam, right?
SummerSlam, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a 6-month storyline essentially that you've told. So, you know, which is I think that's good.
Yeah, yeah. So, what happens with Bliss in the match then if she doesn't win? Because, you know, it as Justin says, this it seems like why bring her back and have her not win with all this buildup and all these skits.
Yeah, with Bliss, it's either the thing is, I don't know if she's going to be babyface or heel. So, you know, because the stuff that they've done kind of, you know, hasn't really signposted one way or the other. So yeah. If she ends up being a heel, then I could see her actually be Ripley's opponent as opposed to Doudrop being Ripley's opponent. So that would be probably the most likely scenario, considering the fact that Ripley, you know, beat Doudrop cleanly, you know, that it might end up being Alexa Bliss, because she's the only one that Ripley did not cross paths with during this whole thing. So yeah, I could see it be a Bliss Ripley feud after this.
All right, very good. He also Justin also says, I really like Austin Theory. I think he has all the tools to be a main event player down the road. I see a lot of people comparing Theory to a young Randy Orton or a young John Cena. I personally see more Ken Kennedy. What are your guys' thoughts about Theory so far, and where do you see him in 6 months? Javier, he got tossed around by Lesnar tonight, felt kind of like a comedy figure, but he continues to talk about Mr. McMahon. He's a protege of Mr. McMahon. I don't think Vince does that to somebody he doesn't have plans for. I get the comparison to Ken Kennedy a bit, but I think Cena is closer. Who does Theory remind you of, either a single wrestler or a blend of two or three?
Give me a second on this one. Because the thing is, I actually started watching him on Evolve. So yeah. I saw the character that he played on Evolve. And
talk about that.
Double check the stuff I say, because I saw it in bits and pieces and it's going off of memory. But I believe he was a member of the Skulk, turned on his trainer, started feuding pretty much with Darby Allin, Priscilla, what was her name?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So she was with Darby Allin. He essentially stole her. And at some point, Regal spoke with the both of them, saying that you two are our future, you know, are going to be the future. And it's basically setting aside the Darby Allin and Austin Theory, you know, as you know, people to watch. And then they basically started feuding. Eventually, Theory wins the Evolve title, and then immediately kicks Priscilla Kelly to the curb, because he was just using her, and he was like your. I kind of like a Nick Aldis guy, you know, like, you know, he's serious and he's, you know, he's just, it's hard to describe. Cause it felt kind of more old school than, you know, stuff that you would see today. And because he was like, you know, he was opportunistic. And then when he took, you know, control plus, but he was also good in the ring. So it wasn't like you could, you know, say, oh, you know, he's not, he's just a cheater and all that stuff. It's like, you know, so maybe like in kinds of personality, maybe like the way that he carried himself was kind of like, I guess like Ric Flair, but not like, you know, without the, in terms of like how important he felt. The thing is that then, you know, over on and that was the other thing, that he would attack the audience by saying that, you know, I'm here at Evolve. Evolve is just a stepping stone for me. NXT is just going to be a stepping stone for me. I'm going to be a WWE champion. So it was almost – so it was a cool story because it was Darby Allin, which was like embodied the indie you know, feel, while he was basically saying, oh, no, I don't care about the indies. I want to be, you know, a Vince McMahon guy. And then, you know, so NXT, then he has the whole comedy bit, and now you have this stuff. But he does have the chops to play an actual serious character. Similar, another one I would describe would be like a Triple H going from, you know, the DX version of him to the more serious corporate-minded guy. He has that, you know, that I could see be a possible future for Austin Theory.
What are the odds? All that said, that you think he ends up being someone at the top of the card? Like, is he a high draft pick for you? In other words, if you're, you know, booking WWE and trying to make money over the next 5-8 years.
I mean, if it were me and I would be doing stuff, then yeah, I'd probably, you know, have him fairly high based, you know, if I were to draft from people who are currently on the roster, he'd be a fairly, you know, high prospect. You know, so I would be very high with them. Question is whether, you know, they get tired of him because, you know, that's how the WWE is always shown. I mean, Damian Priest had the Rockets strapped to him, and, you know, it seemed like, you know, he was on the trajectory to be, you know, main eventing this WrestleMania. And then, like, you know, they just saw something they didn't like. They didn't think he got completely over. And then, you know, now, and then all of a sudden he lost 2 weeks in a row. So, yeah. You know, that's and no longer protected. And he's now like, you know, part of the crew. So, you know, I think Theory, you know, is someone that you could get, they could get behind. I mean, obviously there's going to be something like a flashpoint that, to switch the character that he is, but it kind of, I don't know, Wade, does it feel like they've kind of, cause he seems a little bit more serious than he was like a couple weeks ago when he was just like a complete total, you know, screw up. And he seems like he has like more of a little bit more away from the comedy, a little bit more like sinister.
Yeah. I mean, I think Vince McMahon's not going to be in the storyline if he doesn't help Austin Theory become better. Or he's going to get really frustrated with him quickly, but I don't see an alternative where McMahon's going to be like, well, you let me down, so I'm going with this guy. Like, I don't really see that as an option to go with instead. If that were there and obvious, we could see, oh, Theory's going to get, you know, dumped by McMahon and then get serious and you know, be anti-McMahon or something. I don't see an alternative to ultimately Theory getting better in impressing Vince McMahon. That makes any sense. And so I think it's going to be a slow journey if they stick with it, as you warn everyone. But if Theory doesn't do anything behind the scenes to mess things up, he's having good matches. He's having chances to show what he can do in the ring against good wrestlers. He's getting a lot of TV time. It's not his time yet, but to get a main event push. But I think what you're noticing is intentional, but subtle enough that it's not jarring. And the question is, does Theory get fed up with McMahon berating him and turn babyface before or instead of McMahon finally getting through to him and he ends up being serious and formidable and starts winning? And again, I don't know the genesis of Vince being on Raw. If it was, well, we need to make NBC Universal executives happy, so we're going to put Mr. McMahon on TV regularly to, you know, boost the star power of the show, at a time when viewership was down and maybe some TV executives were thinking there wasn't enough special star power on Raw. And it was him just going, well, I'll do this, and not really fully invested in a long-term story arc. Or is this his way of going, I like this kid. He's maybe the last big star that I christen and elevate to the top. And I need to start thinking about who's going to replace Roman Reigns when Reigns goes to Hollywood and starts doing movies or TV shows or whatever is next for him. And, you know, Drew and Big E are and Riddle are in their mid-30s. Seth Rollins getting there. There's not a ton of youthful options that he's pushing. So I just tend to think McMahon thinks Austin is someone who's a really good bet to invest in. That's somebody from NXT that he can see translating effectively as a top guy more than even, say, you know, Baron Corbin, who was called up, what many thought was premature based on his development compared to others, but he had that size. I think Theory very much appeals to Vince McMahon, and he might be his next chosen one, although they're going to want to avoid actually using that term overtly.
Well, and if you know Vince McMahon's psychology,
yeah.
Austin Theory still has the Austin name.
Oh, true. Yeah. He didn't take that away. Cool. Okay. Let's go to Zach in Texas next. He says it was a nice change of pace to see so much time given to a woman's match. I'll admit, having Rhea Ripley be the Iron Woman of the Gauntlet was a surprise to me. I'd like to think they're setting her up for a post-WrestleMania push, but I don't trust these people. This is going to be shocking, but I wasn't a fan of Becky Lynch tonight. I thought the pouting, throwing the contract, and leaving the ring was over-exaggerated and disingenuous. It was too much, but that's what happens when she's not allowed to be her authentic babyface self. I know Lita doesn't stand a chance on Saturday, but part of me wishes she would beat Becky, even though I want Becky to break the record for most cumulative days as champion. If Lita were to win, Bianca could beat her at Mania and would feel less like Bianca is a consolation prize in place of Becky versus Ronda. Interesting scenario there from Zach. Any chance, Javier, that babyface Lita takes on babyface Bianca in a battle of fan favorites, legend versus current star and star of the future in Bel Air, and that is used as some sort of storyline for Becky's character that she came up short. Is there a route that you could see them at all realistically taking to get there? And then there's always the third option, which is, you know, a multi-person match. And if they're impressed enough with Lita, and she really is back for more than just this one match, you know, there is room, if it's one-on-one Ronda Charlotte, for the Raw match to be a three-way or even a four-way. And then we can reintroduce Ripley or Doudrop or Alexa into the situation. Or Bayley, for that matter, as a late entry.
Is there a fast lane?
No.
Nope, fast lane? Okay.
Nope.
So, I mean, because I could see maybe Lita winning the title and then losing it back to back to Becky as a kind of feel good kind of story thing. And if you want to like have a title change, you know, and that's the only title you're going to change at Elimination Chamber. So, I mean, but I doubt it. I do think it's going to be. I mean, I'm not going to discount multi-woman match. But I mean, when do you pay off Becky and Bianca is the question. So,
yeah.
You know, so you're going to pay it off in one of two places. You're going to pay it off in WrestleMania. You're going to pay it off in, on SummerSlam. They're both on the same roster right now. So unless you somehow get one off the one roster, or the other, I think it's gotta be, Bianca Belair and, you know, she wins it and then they can continue feuding until, you know, closer to SummerSlam. And then, you know, at that point, reassess where you're going to go.
We had a title change on the show, the 24/7 title. I believe William brought it up earlier, and I don't think we expanded on it. Maybe it was a comment in passing, but Dana Brooke on retweeted on Twitter, man, Reggie betraying Dana Brooke for the 24/7 title hit me really deep. I love their friendship. She said, Reggie said, we are still best friends. He's going to cover her restaurant bill. And Dana said, nah, I'm good. What's that saying? Keep your friends close and your enemies closer. Should have gone with my gut. Broken heart. Sad face. So we got a little social media storyline going on here. Was this the Valentine's Day chapter that you were hoping for, Javier, with Dana Brooke and Reggie and the will they or won't they love story that WWE's been telling?
Yeah, because it brought it to a quick end. Quick, merciful end, which is fine, which is perfectly fine. It was I did not want to see a As much as I like the Otis and Mandy stuff, I'm like, I don't really want to watch this right now. And I mean, they were so over the top and so cartoonish anyway, as is everything with the 24/7 title, that it kind of felt like this was one of the, this was pretty much the only way it could have gone. And it happening on Valentine's Day, it was, you know, it ruined everybody's Valentine's at that restaurant.
Yeah.
As people start fighting, I felt really bad for them. It was entertaining enough. It filled time.
So Dan also said, I can't believe this. I always thought a solid foundation for a relationship started with friends and trust. !! Now I lose my BF, I think she meant best friend, not boyfriend, but Dana, clarify, and my 24/7 title, and get stuck paying the bill? I'm going to need some time. And then she says, hello, broken heart. I tried to do things the right way and get totally screwed over and lost my title and I lost my best friend and stuck paying for the bill. Hello. What I'm wondering is, why did she say the same thing twice with different words just a few minutes apart? I think that's very weird. Maybe she got concussed on that roll-up. And she's retweeting other people going, my heart is broken on what he did you. You're the greatest 24/7 champion in my heart. Someone else said, Reggie, how could you? Someone else said, he shouldn't have done that. Get your revenge and take your championship back. Dana says, I love y'all. Thanks for being there through the ups and downs. So what did this do for Reggie and Dana? And is it now really over? Or do you think they will or ought to continue with it in some form or fashion? I honestly have enjoyed Dana Brooke as 24/7 champion. Her earnestness and like genuine enthusiasm for that title was sort of like weird at first. And then just, I think, sort of endearing. And the, you know, Reggie being relatable as the forever friend, but in the friend zone, and Byron Saxton quipping last week, I know what that's like. I think that, you know, was well done. Setting aside how you feel about the perhaps sudden breakup and on Valentine's Day in that. So I assume it continues with Dana trying to get the title back, but what happens on Twitter isn't necessarily what the writers have in mind.
Yeah, I mean, what I'd like to see is her like try to get him back like Fatal Attraction style, but in a cute way, like how you would see in a cartoon that's referencing Fatal Attraction, because this is a cartoon.
Reggie, like cats. Do you like cats?
Yeah, so yeah, something like that. Just that would be that's what, you know, as long as it's entertaining is all I care about, because that's what 24/7 is. Just, you know, kill, you know, 10 to 15 minutes and, you know, maybe make you smile or laugh and hopefully not roll your eyes too much where you detach your retinas. I mean, that's pretty much what I'm looking for.
That is a goal. All right. Very good. Let's see if we have perhaps a Skype or international caller.
Go ahead.
That happens sometimes. So our phone lines are open. If you're still listening to our live stream, 347-215-8558. Another big happening on this show, Javier, we haven't talked about yet. Do you know what I'm getting to?
We had the AJ Styles, Damian.
Well, we'll talk about that, too. You've given me another thing to bring up.
Yeah. The Toga Party.
Yes, we got Toga Party, too. We'll talk about that. We got more stuff on the docket here. But I'm talking NXT mainstay, top-tier guy.
Yeah, that should have been the one, because I thought about that earlier. That was like, because I that they really, really want to pop a rating for tomorrow.
Yeah.
Bringing Tommaso Ciampa in and then pretty much telling you the entire story that's going on with on NXT with Dolph Ziggler.
I mean, it was almost 4 hours ago, so that's fine. But they replay what happened last week. Todd Martin on The Fix talked about, you know, why do you have a guy of Ziggler's level or any level go to NXT and just start the narrative that you guys are the minor league? You know, in talking down to them. And I agree. And I didn't think having it, it felt like Ciampa and Ziggler and the announcers just had to sort of, like, they were being defensive. You know, Tommaso Ciampa's like, people say I've been doing nothing for 6 years, but I've been headlining and selling out buildings. It's like, wait, what? You don't go on a first date and then sit down and look opposite of the person you're going, well, all my exes say that I'm psycho, but let me assure you I'm not. Like, why would you lead with that? You know, Tommaso Ciampa, you're on Raw, and you should not be explaining to people who aren't even thinking it that you shouldn't be explaining that you're not something that, frankly, nobody should be thinking. And if they are, you shouldn't justify it by addressing it and defensively defending yourself against what people are – what, quote, people are saying. So I didn't like that approach, and I don't like that Ciampa's feuding with Ziggler. Ziggler's he's a mid-card tag team guy in the final third of his career, perhaps deep into it, perhaps not, depending on his bump card and desires in WWE and all that. But I just don't like that. And to me, Ciampa is a big enough deal that if he shows up on Raw, it should be at a minimum something having to do with somebody at Austin Theory's level, a singles wrestler on the rise that you can be have a good match with, have a feud with, maybe be a gatekeeper of sorts, maybe win before losing or lose before winning. Not Dolph Ziggler at this stage. He's 10 years past the conversation of being a top-tier singles guy. He's really, really good in the ring. And if they, they're going to have a really good match. But I just don't like the way this frames NXT. If the goal is to build up NXT viewership, and you lead with, we're not the minor leagues. Really, really, we're not. What we're doing is really important. Let me explain to you why and tell you why. And then one of your top two guys on the roster, arguably, is feuding with Dolph Ziggler in an even Steven kind of – I don't like that. So your thoughts on that aspect of it and just also how Ciampa came across otherwise.
Yeah, because that was my thought, because I'm like, what can Ciampa say about still being in NXT? The only thing to say, which is the truth, is that, this is where he wants to be and he wants to help the younger talent, but that does not work, the story that, the actual story of the WWE. So you're going to say, oh, well, I've been selling out arenas, all over the place, but like compared to the stadiums that WrestleMania sells out, have you done that? So again, you're forcing these comparisons that you don't want to be making. In terms of, when they wrestle, that I don't mind as much, just because the WWE is basically everybody's 50-50. Everyone's just as good as each other. So I could see them, wrestle a competitive match. But why are you having this match? Ciampa literally called himself, I'm not sure if it was on commentary or on the replay they showed, literally called himself the gatekeeper, saying that if you want the title, you're either going to have to go through me or take it from me. And I'm like, that's great if you're wrestling a up-and-coming person, but this is Ziggler, and it's, I don't think Ziggler's going there the way that Mandy Rose, to basically rehabilitate her image and, reinvent herself. I don't think that's what Ziggler's there for. What are you going to be reinventing yourself to right now? So, yeah, it's just weird why they would choose Ziggler for this role and have him, feud against Ciampa instead of a younger talent. That's just, I think they're saying, Ziggler's a great wrestler. Tommaso Ciampa is a great wrestler. And, I would be interested, mildly interested in actually watching that matchup if it weren't happening in the – if this were the old NXT. But with the new NXT, I'm like, which is more WWE – wrestling oriented, is like I there's no reason for me to want to watch this match.
And he didn't get a lot of time on commentary either to really get himself across. I was not a fan of this, and you played the Ciampa card at a time when it just has very little impact, and I get they probably don't think he's ever going to be a major player on Raw, but this sort of established that. If he shows up again, he's the guy who was feuding with Dolph Ziggler as a gatekeeper guy. He's a guy that you should, because of how intense and just accomplished he is. He's a guy that you have in your bullpen if you really, let's say AJ Styles is scheduled for a big match and he goes down with an injury and everyone else is paired up and you just need to run an angle on 3 weeks, 4 weeks notice to set up a big match. You just have Ciampa show up and just tell him, come up with something, and I bet it'll be good, and roll with it. And now he's the guy who did guest commentary for a feud with Ziggler. I'm just not a fan. I mean, it can do everything I said again. I think it'll have less impact if he ever does a main roster feud because of this.
And do you think that they did enough to establish who Ciampa was?
No, of course not. No, they did not.
Because, I mean, that's been something that we've been talking about with Jay White showing up in AEW. So,
oh, I know.
You know. So I'm like.
But all the cool kids love Jay White and know who he is.
Yeah, you know, and the cool kids like Ciampa also. So it's like.
I know.
You know, I mean, because did they even establish his Bonafides, whatever?
Nope.
So I mean, you know, at least with Jay White on the Rampage show, they said, you know, he's won these titles, and yeah, you know, so at least, you know, you're like, okay, well, I guess he's a big shot somewhere. At the very least, you get that. If you haven't been watching NXT with Ciampa, you just saw like this old looking, broken down dude.
Yes, exactly.
You know, I'm like, you know, so like if you're not someone who's familiar with NXT at all or hasn't been, you know, but you know. It's puzzling.
Yeah. All right. You brought up the toga party. Did this pay off sufficiently for you, or are you? If it didn't, are you glad it didn't? It didn't turn into a major thing, but they went to it a few times, and I guess you know what, Apollo Crews was the biggest star who chose to attend, or I guess Carmella would be, and Queen Zelina are bigger stars than Apollo.
Yeah, I mean it was. If you're going to do it and have it through so many skits, at least do something fun with it. You know, like they really did like next to nothing.
Yeah.
So it's like, and then it was just them hanging around, Riddle being a goof. I'm going to channel Todd Martin to say that loved the Chad Gable face turn when he finally attacked to end this nonsense. With the caveat that I mentioned earlier, that I like the fact that it kind of spread a lot of stories throughout the entire show. With that caveat, it was not the best part of the stuff that they spread. So, and it led to the end with Riddle, you know, coming out for revenge when Gable and Otis were going to interfere in the match between Orton and Seth Rollins, even though that still went awry because Orton still lost.
Yeah, I mean, the main event finish, you know, you're watching this going, are they going to have Randy lose clean? Are they going to have Seth lose clean? Seth going into the chamber, that doesn't make sense. But, you know, Orton doesn't just do jobs to put over a guy like Seth, who doesn't need it. You know, this was a match they put together because, one, they wanted to have a long match that would be good on sci-fi to fill time and give present the image that they're giving you a big main event. Because these are two big stars, but it's not a feud. It's not giving anything away that they're banking on for one of their premier live events or anything like that. So it wasn't a match where a clean finish made sense. And this is where, if you're going to have a company that doesn't just do all clean finishes, then this is a match where you would go, this makes sense not to do a clean finish, if that's your philosophy. So having Seth stomp Orton after Orton got distracted by Gable and Otis, and Gable and Otis are feuding with Orton and Riddle, you give Seth a tainted win that he can gloat about, and you also give Orton an excuse for losing and a new reason to go after Gable and Otis because of it. So I get why WWE booked the match, and they probably booked it with the purpose of this angle in mind. So I'm just sort of agnostic about it and just kind of understand they needed a main event, they wanted some good wrestling, and they wanted an angle, and it's on a show that fewer people are watching by a pretty wide margin than normal. So that's kind of my take on the main event finish, Javier.
Yeah, I don't hate the distraction or interference or, you know, fake finishes when it's a match that's not part of the actual feud, when somebody from the, you know, who one of the two parties is feuding with a third party, and then that third party interferes in the match. I'm a lot, you know, cooler with that in respect. The ones I hate is that when it's, you know, had, you know, Gabe, Orton is wrestling Otis, and then Gable distracts him, and then Otis wins. I mean, those, you know, where it's like the same people fighting over and over again and just finding different ways to combine them. That I hate. But when it's outside like that, it's fine. As long as you don't overdo it, which, you know, obviously always, you know, we've been there. But yeah, I mean, and I lost my train of thought. So
we're just, it's a main event on a sci-fi week.
Yeah.
And
so,
it
boarded
an angle, and it gave you 15 minutes of some, you know, solid wrestling action. I mean, I'm just sort of agnostic on it. I understand.
Yeah, and I mean, it's some good psychology there with, he goes to do the stun and then nails him with the with that slam that he does, and there was some good psychology in that match. So it wasn't like and Randy Orton, who sometimes seems like he's going through the paces, this felt he was engaged in the match. So it was actually a pretty good match. So I kind of felt a little bit disappointed when it ended the way it was, but it's kind of what you were expecting.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine another finish that fits WWE's style of booking and also fits the scheme of where they are right now and the stories they're telling.
Yeah.
Chad Gable gives a big speech on cheaters. You people think I'm a cheater. I'm not a cheater. I didn't cheat to win the Olympics or to win the tag titles or to get a 4.0 GPA and get my master's degree. And then he cheats to win, yanking on Dominic's trunks to win. I'm not sure the announcers drew as much attention to it as I think the people who created the storyline thought ought to be spotlighted when that finish happened, but I got a kick out of Gable, as a heel should, gloating over a victory after acting hypocritically. And it was a 13-minute match, and I mean, it's Ray and Dominic against Chad and Otis. There was some good stuff in this. What do you think of the match?
Yeah, I thought the match was good. I was trying to pay attention to Dominic, see how he's progressed.
Yeah.
He was not a horrible 619.
It's sort of like Britt Baker doing the super kick, it's like, it was so awful. It's like, just stop. I don't care if Adam Cole does it. You shouldn't be. And with Dominic, it's like, I don't care if your dad is 619, get better before you put it on national TV again. And, because his body just doesn't move in a way that befits that being a move he does.
Yes. I think it's because he gets there later. It looks like his dad's hitting first and he's just helping his dad along. I thought it was a fine match. I did like, once Miz is out, you're like, okay, we're going to have that distraction. We're going to have some sort of weird finish, in particular since that's how Dominic beat the Miz. So this was another one that wrote it, that if you pay any attention to WWE and watch more than like 4 weeks in a row, you know what they're going to do. I like the touch of them so hitting the, oh, they're cheaters. You shouldn't be working with cheaters. And it was like just hammered that point over the head, and then he just grabs the tights. And yeah, you're right. It was like they didn't mention it, but it wasn't like because the thing is they act with full outrage so much all the time that it's like, well, you were a little bit more low key this time, so does that mean it didn't really matter?
Yeah. All right. AJ Styles and Damian Priest. Damian Priest wins. And it's a short match. It went about 5 minutes. And to me, during the match, the headline is Jimmy Smith calling AJ Styles an old dog. He's like, I don't know if he's going into business on his own or this is an official like dialogue, but it's like when TNA couldn't stop talking about how old Sting was, even though he looked 35 and they kept talking about him being 52 or, whatever. It's like, shut up. Nobody's thinking that except you're drawing attention to it. AJ doesn't look old. He doesn't move old. He's a legend. If you sit and think about it and do the math, of course he's old for a wrestler. He's in his 40s, but they don't need to talk about it. But it's one thing to talk about it, and it's another thing, Jimmy, to bring up the story. An old dog, the thing about an old dog learning new tricks? Well, AJ still is. It's like, you just called AJ Styles an old dog. You got to think about that. I just thought that was, it's not a huge deal. But I bet if I'm AJ, I wouldn't be shocked, I'll put it this way, if AJ is pissed about that. You just don't frame somebody that way, especially in a match you're going to lose. So that was one of the stories of this match. Also afterwards, after Styles won with a sunset flip, it wasn't exactly like a decisive lose by your finisher. So in the WWE universe of logic, that's not as meaningful a loss when you get rolled up with a sunset flip or a schoolboy or something. But still, it was a clean loss. And afterwards, Styles offered to shake Priest's hand and congratulate him. So you say it's a bit of a passing of the torch. The other talking point from this is the announcers talked about Priest costing himself matches lately because of his temper, and that didn't come into play in this match. So Javier, grab onto any of those and elaborate.
Well, I don't think I've ever had a more quick switch from like, yay, to whoa, in a match. Because when AJ Styles goes to do the phenomenal forearm, And Priest is able, you know, counters it because that's how he lost. He's like, oh, you know, psychologically they're playing off of the previous match, and he, you know, now he knows how to get out of the way because he's cool, you know, cool-headed and knew to avoid it. And then, like, you get the roll-up, and I'm like, you know, which, again, it's a fake finish in the world of WWE. So I went from, like, oh, that was a cool psychological moment to, like, oh, great. It was just there to get us to this finish. If you are looking for confirmation bias, if you think AJ Styles might end up winning and might be involved in the main event in WrestleMania, just mentioning that he's an old dog and that, you know, he's, you know, I mean, you know, I agree with everything you said, but, like, mentioning that, you know, this is going to be his last run on the top. You know, I mean, they did a similar storyline with Tanahashi. They didn't hit the, you know, he's old over the top as hard as they did, but you know he Tanahashi is, you know, you could just look at him and see that he's not moving the way he used to, and that, you know, when he won the title last time, it's like, okay, this is likely going to be the last, you know, very good shot that it's his last hurrah. And then with AJ Styles, it's like, you know, if you think that, hey, look, you know, he's been a good champion for us, you know, in the past, and we're going to go ahead and give it to him just so we can, you know, you know, he could hold it for a bit while we get, like, someone in the next generation ready and up there. You know, that I think that mentioning, you know, the whole that he's a vet and he's, you know, this is like, you know, the last hurrah, basically. I could see that might be what they're going for.
Javier, anything else in your notes that you want to bring up from the show?
Poor Dana, 24/7. Big deal about cheating. No, I think I pretty much nailed everything, and I'm just stretching this out to make sure, because then I'm going to regret it tomorrow when I'm like, oh, crap, I didn't miss. Oh, yes, forgot the most important match, almost, and Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I had on that is, like, why are they still called the Hurt Business? I mean, why are they allowed to use that brand?
Yeah, they shouldn't be, because you might want to someday have Lashley reestablish some sort of faction with MVP, and having somebody go by that name lose that badly does hurt the brand.
Yeah. So it's like, and poor Cedric, man, because love Cedric, but just what? I mean, he. I think that he could do what Gable's doing now. Not in the personality department, because we had some of that. I remember some of that stuff that we did. Yeah, but in terms of, like, the wrestling department, you know, he could be like a solid guy to wrestle. But that's about it, I think. Right?
Yep, I think so. Anything you want to plug, Javier?
Just be on the lookout for the primer for Elimination Chamber. This is going to be one of my favorite ones to do. my little silent protest is I try to put a little bit of personality into the primers, and on the Saudi ones, it's like, it doesn't seem right. And I'm like, just to business. So be on the lookout for that. I was also on with Tyler Sage on Friday's Rampage post show. So we talked about that, and we just went off on, like, a bunch of topics and just a lot.
Yeah, that is a VIP exclusive, by the way. So if you want our Rampage post show, it gets posted every Friday night, late at night. So if you're an AEW fan and you're a fan of our Dynamite post show, our Rampage post show with Tyler Sage and a rotation of guest co-hosts is available as a perk of VIP membership. So check that out. Go VIP, pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Javier, speaking of Saudi Arabia, did you notice WWE just seems to be inching more and more into the realm of patting themselves on the back for helping forward societal acceptance worldwide? They were very, very proud of themselves when they showed scenes of Saudi Arabia and the skyline, and then that women were on a billboard. And Corey Graves said, you know, that they're changing the world. Did that strike you at all?
I mean, you're saying inching forward. I think they just look into their arms. The what I find annoying personally is the fact that you do change cultures by exposing people to your culture. And the WWE is basically sort of weaponized that, you know, and saying that, oh, well, we know that you change cultures, showing our cultures, but then they're like, and look, we're doing it. And, you know, to take credit for it, but what you're doing is just like the promotion version of that. You're not necessarily really doing it. I mean, sure, there might be some people in Saudi Arabia that you're, you know, hearts and minds that you might be changing here and there, but the billboard does not mean that. The, you know, that none of that means anything. And if you're like going so far out of your way to, you know, just pat yourself on the back, then, you know, you're just doing it for clout. You're just doing it for, to say, hey, look, we're good people. When, you know, if you really want to do it, explain why it's a big deal that they're women on the billboard. Explain that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, because when you deal with it, you know, the whole sociopolitical thing is like obviously going to be complicated. So it's, you know, but in terms of like what the WWE is doing is, you know, it is a bought and paid for show. So it's not like we're talking about, you know, they let you put up and people are buying seats and buying tickets to come essentially, you know, to see you. And like, whoever wants to show up, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, from the previous ones I've seen, it seems like, you know, the people that they, you know, pick and choose, you know, cause they in other countries, you know, that have events like this, you know, that are authoritarian, they do the same thing. So
they did have on the billboard a website or a ticket agency saying tickets available. So, to some degree, tickets are going to the general public for sale.
Yeah, but in a lot of cases, I don't know Saudi Arabia, but you know some of the, you know, like other countries I'm aware of, they, you know, you kind of have to, like, there's some people are not going to be allowed to go.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You still have to show who you are, you know, and yeah. You know, so they're you know, I mean I don't know the actual stuff in that area, so I don't want anybody to, you know, take the idea that I'm, you know, but that's usually what ends up happening in those situations, but you know.
And WWE is taking an obscenely above market value amount of money to run these shows. And that gives off a smell of, we are being paid to spread propaganda about a controversial country, to put it lightly. And so when they start saying, you know, when Jimmy Smith saying after they show, you know, the architectural skyline of Jeddah and going, that's not the future we're looking at. That's Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. It's like now they're just promoting tourism and saying because they have great architecture, they're futuristic and they're to be admired and you know, fawned over. And it's like you're only saying that because they're paying you a ton of money to say that. It's an impressive-looking architectural skyline, but when you get paid above market value, with the idea being what comes with that money is spreading tourism propaganda about a country with a shameful past and shameful current setup, then you start feeling even more – it feels more distasteful than it would otherwise. And it otherwise feels distasteful because Saudi Arabia is getting all these special appearance matches that typically, including an Elimination Chamber match, that a lot of people like to travel to go see. They'd like to be able to drive to go see it, fly to go see it. Or it might be in your hometown, and now that's being taken away because this obscene amount of money is being paid to WWE, and where did that money come from, and what other things does that justify? And then you have Corey Graves saying WWE continues to influence the world. It's like, no, you're being influenced by your employer who's taking a ton of money to increase profitability and break revenue records. And now you're saying it continues to influence the world because that's what Saudi Arabia gave to everyone in WWE. And I've talked to people in WWE who feel this way. Well, at least we're doing some good. It's like it's the sweetener in the medicine that makes it go down easier. But they're being used and they're being paid off. And the propaganda with, you know, is, hey, but look, we're influencing the world because there's women on a billboard. What civilized society with that level of architecture, should it be an achievement for female athletes to be featured on a billboard? Are we really patting them on the back? That's like patting a 15-year-old on the back for doing his homework. It's like, no, that's what you're expected to frickin' do. You know, just because you had trouble in fourth grade doing your homework doesn't mean at age 15 you still get props for simply doing what's expected of you. And that's what's going on here. Let's pat Saudi Arabia on the back for we're advancing their culture. There's women on a billboard. It's like you shouldn't be being complimented for that. That's shameful that should be something that you expect to be complimented for, that in 2022 is progress. That should be a given by now. But WWE frames it that way, not out of the goodness of their heart, not because there's fan demand for this event, but because they're getting paid all this money. And so the logo's not getting booed like it was a couple years ago, pre-pandemic, Javier, but that stench is still there. The Jamal Khashoggi slaughter isn't on the forefront of people's minds. But you have WWE now easing back into feeling more comfortable. Whether the people doing it are plugging their nose and feeling awful about it or not, I don't know. But the message being sent on TV is back to that initial propaganda from that first show where everyone was fawning over it. But even Corey Graves, like, I don't think he was made to say at the last show, oh, the restaurants are so great and we're treated so well by all the people. And it's like, that is not the definition of a fair, equal democracy or society, that rich, famous people who get sent to a restaurant are treated well. Like, you should be smart enough not to say that on the air unless you're forced to by your employer, and even that is shameful.
Well, I mean, you know who gets treated really well in Cuba? Tourists.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, you don't see the day-to-day stuff that is actually going, that happens in a lot of those places. Like, I mean, I'm going through, I'm memories of like other places, you still have class systems where, like, you know, people are just not allowed to be, you know, allowed to go in because they may believe some sort of thing or have, you know, something else going on.
I just have a question from Corey Graves. Can two women or two men who are dating who work for WWE go hand and sit next to each other in a booth, hold hands and kiss? Because if they can't, then shut up about how nicely you, Corey Graves, are treated at a restaurant that's serving good food. Like, it's just zip it. Like, don't go there. Like, don't start praising the food and the service and the friendliness of the people, because you're only saying good things about this country that isn't what it ought to be in the year 2022. Only because the company you work for is getting paid this above market value amount of money for a show that is not there because of fan demand. That's my nice way of putting it.
Yeah.
All right. Javier, thanks. I appreciate it. Thanks to everyone who listened and contributed. Go ahead, Javier. Yeah.
Yeah. On that note, thank you for spending Valentine's night with me.
Yes. It's been fun. It went better for us than Reggie and Dana.
Yeah.
And everyone in that restaurant.
Yep.
Yep. Although I'm going to stick you with the bill.
God damn it.
Thanks. Talk to you next time.
Good night.
Yep, good night. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.